Welcome to Three and Out, your national NFL podcast featuring three sports media pros. Me, Ty Schalter from 538, joined by Samantha Bunton of NBC Sports and Michael Schotty of PickWatch.com. It's time for our big show where we go long on a big NFL topic and make a full slate of picks for this week's games, brought to you, as always, by PickWatch.com. We also have a big guest for you, like always, Jarrett Bailey of Fansided and Steeler Nation. But before we get to Jarrett, before we pick his brains about being on the right side of the tie that wasn't, make sure you are subscribed on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Castro, Overcast, lots of casts, wherever it is. Make sure you download the Halftime app at thehalftime.app or go to the App Store on your phone, download Halftime. Make sure you follow me, Samantha, and Shadi, because we go live every Monday night at 9 ET. Whether there's football on, whether there's anything else on, we are going to be talking about it. We're going to be taking your questions, and then it gets dropped right here in this feed. All right, it is time for our big topic, reviewing our way too early year-end awards that we handed out way before the season even started back in May. You guys ready to do this?
Let's do it. I'm a little scared, but
yeah,
I'm ready.
Yeah,
I think I'm ready.
Well, okay. All right. Let's start with Defensive Rookie of the Year. I got outvoted on this one, and in hindsight, I'm glad I did. I went up on a table for Patrick Surtain, but you guys went with Micah Parsons, and I mean, wow, well done.
Micah Parsons, the no-doubter here. I'm thrilled, of course, as a fellow Penn State alum, and this is the guy who I thought could do it all along. He's just been exceptional, like, to the point where there was a part of the season, a large part of the season, where we were kind of all sitting around discussing, like, is he the defensive player of the year, not the defensive rookie of the year? And that backed off a little bit, especially when his teammates got healthy and he could kind of go back to the role he was originally intended for. But just really, really impressive, kind of a no-doubter defensive rookie of the year campaign. But I will say this for your pick, Ty, Patrick Surtain is not raw, per se. I mean, he did an outstanding job. He just, like, got kinged by Micah Parsons. But that is by no means an incorrect pick.
Yeah, when I look at this award, it's less about, does Micah Parsons deserve this award? It's actually, does Micah Parsons, you know, getting these kind of honors, getting this kind of publicity, getting this kind of buzz, does this change the way teams move going forward? Because there has been for a long time this idea that you just don't draft off the ball linebackers very high in the draft. And how many teams with that mindset are going into this draft class in 2022 wishing they had a Micah Parsons on their team? He's a singular player. There are not two of Micah Parsons out there. There's not one in this draft class. There's not one in the next 20 draft classes. But there are guys like N'Kobe Dean from Georgia. There are guys that you can, you know, sort of move, shift around, you know, maybe put their hand down as a pass rusher here and there, or just blitz from the interior. And we've seen the game change to a point where maybe the Micah Parsons of the world or the N'Kobe Deans of the world are what teams need to cover the tight ends that have been, you know, tearing up the NFL from an offensive perspective. Maybe it is what you need to stop all the RPOs and the play action passing and the quarterback running that's been, you know, becoming more and more prevalent as the NFL goes on. And I do wonder if this idea that you shouldn't draft a Micah Parsons high is going to get either A, completely washed out, and you start seeing guys like N'Kobe Dean and others being drafted a little bit higher. But more importantly, for these teams that do that, is this going to end up being one of those fads that goes away really quickly? Because for every team that tries to find a Micah Parsons, you get 10 teams that try to find one and fail.
Yeah, for me, I was looking at Micah Parsons and going, if you need an edge rusher, he's not really an edge rusher. If you need a linebacker, he's not a straight linebacker. I don't know. Doesn't seem like a, you know, great fit to me. But obviously, Dan Quinn is like, you give me a guy who can fill a gap against the run, against the pass, who can get upfield, I will find a gap to put him in. And it doesn't matter whether his hand is up or down. Great, great work by you guys. Great work, obviously, by the Cowboys seeing that fit and fitting it. Offensive Rookie of the Year, we went with Kyle Pitts. Speaking of another player where you go, oh, does he fit? Where does he fit? What is he? Is he going to have an impact? Kyle Pitts did have an impact. I want to say for us right there, Kyle Pitts did have an impact. But Shadi, Kyle Pitts is not the offensive rookie of the year.
I mean, again, it's not that bad of a pick. When you look back on it, there were a handful of games this season where he was their entire offense. I would like to have seen what he looks like with, Calvin Ridley still as part of that passing attack, a defense that could get a stop here or there, an offensive line that could block a little bit better. You yourself have been on the Atlanta is a really good, bad team train. And Kyle Pitts was a really good piece for that really bad team. Obviously, Cordarrelle Patterson was more a piece of their offensive success than Kyle Pitts was. But honestly, if you take Kyle Pitts or Cordarrelle Patterson away from this team, it was just atrocious all season long. So was he the dude this season? Sure. But I mean, who do you guys would put instead?
Yeah, I don't know. I think I disagree. I think we got to take the L on this one, guys. I don't think we can say, well, he turned out to be good, so we were right, when there were a couple of other people who were like definitively better and more impactful, that being first Jamar Chase and Mac Jones, who were obviously far more instrumental in their team's success. And yes, did he have a worse situation than both of them? Of course, but that's not how we choose. So yeah, I think we have to take a hit on this one, guys. And Kyle Pitts is a very good player, and I don't think it was an unintelligent pick or what have you, but we weren't right here.
Yeah, no, I'll hold more of an L on Mac Jones, because I really did not think he was going to start. And I really did not think, I really did not think Bill Belichick going, I just need another like kind of pudgy white guy, and I'll make the rest work out, was gonna work out. And when they cut Cam Newton, I was like, man, are you kidding me? They're gonna roll with Mac Jones. And obviously there were weeks they won because of him, but there were also weeks they won literally without any contribution from him whatsoever. As we broadcasted live on halftime, that's Monday night. And also Jamar Chase, I mean, you can't say enough. I was suspicious that two guys could do the same thing in the NFL that they did in college. But wow. And especially after the preseason, I think Jamar Chase had like one target for 8 yards. But back in May, we didn't even have that information. So I think Chase doing what he did, breaking all those records, you can't say no to him being offensive rookie of the year, I don't think. Let's move on. Defensive player of the year. And Samantha, you were midseason saying Micah Parsons should be coming home with two trophies out of this. And it's not impossible that he does. We did not go quite that bold. Instead, we went with Myles Garrett. Samantha, how do you think we did with the preseason pick?
I think we did pretty well here. I don't think it's going to end up being Myles Garrett. It's probably going to end up being TJ Watt, which is sharp, of course. But a lot of that has to do with sort of what the numbers look like and what is weighed more heavily for the voting in this, and kind of how it looks. It doesn't really help that the Browns kind of crashed and burned. That stuff does come into play, even though it's not supposed to. It does. But I think this was a good pick. It's sort of a chalky pick, of course. I mean, Myles Garrett, if he's healthy, he's going to be in the conversation as long as he's in the prime of his career, even if the Browns are stinking it up in other ways. But where would we put him at the end of this? Probably second, maybe third, depending on what criteria you're using. So, yeah, I mean, you can make a great case for Myles Garrett. He will finish probably second, third, something like that in the voting. I don't think he's going to beat out TJ Watt. I'm not sure I think he should, but this was a good pick. I don't have any issue with what we did here.
Yeah, I mean, it is TJ Watt. There is a discussion to be had for like who the best player is versus who wins an award, usually based on things like hype, things like the people who vote for the award have to be cognizant of a player's impact. And does a player like TJ Watt, who almost single-handedly at times lifted that Pittsburgh defense into games, obviously, you know, chase the record, you know, things like that. Obviously it's TJ Watt. The only other player I think I would throw in there as potential, like, could be the dude. If we were all like watching every single game and breaking down the tape, JC Jackson had a great, great year for the New England Patriots. And I think doesn't get enough credit for the things that he was able to do, especially in a year when Trayvon Diggs had so many interceptions. People stopped talking about JC Jackson. And when you watch that Patriot defense, which was the reason the Patriots are in the playoffs, it was the reason they were winning games. We're talking about potentially giving Mac Jones a Rookie of the Year award, just because he got them to the playoffs. JC Jackson probably had the more impactful season. I think he was one of PFF's highest graded players of the year. And he just, when you watch them, he's becoming almost, and I'm going to use the term with all due reverence, he's not that guy, but it's almost becoming Revis-like in that it completely shifts the balance of the field. And the Patriots really only need to scheme half the field because they know JC Jackson has the other side covered.
Yeah, I'm going to stump for us a little bit here. I was really intrigued by a thread Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus posted. Kind of like, okay, how come everybody's all mad? TJ Watt tied the sack record despite missing time. How could we possibly put Myles Garrett first team All-Pro over him with a better PFF grade? And he ran down this list of, like, you know, half sacks are screwing Myles Garrett because the NFL is awarding sacks and half sacks to, like, round out the box score, right? Like, oh, wait, if a quarterback was sacked five times, we can't give out 7.5, you know, that kind of thing. And his pass rush win rate, the quarterbacks that he played had a huge effect. He pointed out Garrett played the Steelers twice, and Ben's average time to throw this season was 2.2 seconds. That they're in their first meeting, Garrett going up against Dan Moore Jr., Moore got a PFF pass blocking grade of 0 for that game, but Garrett only had 4 pressures because the ball was already gone by the time he got there. So, you know, if the quarterback's getting rid of it faster than you can get to him, even if there's no blocker in front of you, you know, you're not going to get a lot of sacks. So there's a lot to that. And I still think Garrett is a very, very defensible pick. And if he won it, I don't think it would be the worst thing in the world. But hey, awards are awards. And when you do what TJ Watt did, both in terms of numbers and in terms of elevating a extremely mediocre Steelers team to the playoffs against all odds, you know, you can be the player of the year without being the best player or even the most valuable player, who we'll get to in a minute. But first, let's go offensive player of the year. You guys, Nick Chubb was our pick, and you know, there was a lot of reasons to believe that that might be smart. That I don't think is how things worked out. Shadi, how do you assess us in our selection of Nick Chubb here?
Yeah, you can never really foresee either injuries or the COVID bug, or even not just Chubb himself, but there were games where he was running behind, you know, not quite an offensive line, or not quite the offensive line that he'd hoped for. But what we did was we took a very impactful player who is running behind one of the best offensive lines in the NFL, definitely the best interior offensive line in the NFL. And that was a good, solid pick. But I do look back and think that we all probably could have seen Cooper Kupp coming. Like, when Kenny Golladay was Kenny Golladay with Matthew Stafford, and now he's, you know, not Kenny Golladay anymore. I think we all could have seen Cooper Kupp coming, at least to some extent, maybe not to quite the, you know, record breaking, earth shattering, entirely uncoverable sort of guy that he is. But I think we probably could have at least thrown some bones his way as well.
Yeah, I think that one certainly is something you can make the argument that you should have seen it, or at least discuss the possibility of it. Then you've got Jonathan Taylor, which I'm not sure anyone could have seen coming. I think it's interesting we went Nick Chubb here and not Derrick Henry. And it's a good thing we did, because we wound up with the better pick of the two because of the injury. But it kind of doesn't make sense when you think about it in the context. Like, why did we do this? I'm not sure. It ends up being the better pick because he certainly logged a lot more yards than Derrick Henry did, but that was an injury. That's luck. So we got a little bit lucky there. Again, this was a good pick. It made a lot of sense. I think you can argue that, like you said, Shadi, that the Cooper Kupp is something we should have at least considered. At the same time, how many conversations do we have about Cooper Kupp before this season? Like, probably one. Right. So like to pluck out a receiver and say this guy and Matthew Stafford are going to make magic. It's like a little bit like, OK, I could see how someone could predict it. I wouldn't necessarily expect them to do that. So he is at the top of my list for sure as to who should actually get this award. But I don't think this was a bad pick, although I will acknowledge it was not the correct pick.
Yeah, no, I agree. Jonathan Taylor is another person who's going to get quite a bit of buzz that I don't think there's any way you could sit there in May and be like, I'm calling it right now. Jonathan Taylor, Offensive Player of the Year. And I was getting up on the table, guys, for Rams throughout our preseason awards, throughout our summer talk, throughout the actual NFL preseason. Like, Rams are going to be unbelievable. Rams are going to put up pinball numbers. But I did not say like Cooper Kupp. And I think, you know, the injury to Robert Woods kind of, you know, not that Robert Woods was having anywhere as near big a year as Cooper Kupp statistically, and certainly from a fantasy perspective, but that it got kind of whittled down to, you know, from the Rams have all these weapons, unbelievable, to like, okay, the Rams have Cooper Kupp and Matthew Stafford is just going to keep chucking it to him. You know, once Woods went down, you know, obviously they brought in Odell Beckham and Van Jefferson's been a guy, but like it's Kupp beginning and end and middle, and I think he gets this trophy without breaking a sweat. Comeback Player of the Year, Dak Prescott is our pick. I think Dak Prescott is going to be the pick. But guys, isn't it fascinating that we didn't spend all year talking about this basically at all?
I mean, I kind of forgot about it. Like, right? The award, right? His situation, even though weirdly, we did have conversations where we were like, oh, there's something up with his mechanics. I think the ankle is still bothering him. But we didn't think about it in this context. We're like, ooh, what's with that? What's with that? And I think it's because there were multiple mechanical problems that weren't necessarily connected to the original injury. And sure, the shoulder, I mean, you know, there was a conversation way back during the preseason where we were all talking about like, oh, they've called the Rangers, like, because this is a common injury for pitchers. Oh, finally, this is what they should have done back when there was a bunch of us who were screaming about how they should have been talking to the Rangers back in the spring, because pitchers rehab this injury pretty regularly. A baseball team would know exactly what to do with it, and they just didn't do it. And then we all kind of forgot about it after that. We were like, oh, this is a problem. Why didn't you do this earlier? And then the season went on and we all forgot about it. So yeah, why not? I don't know who else you'd give it to. I mean, I will say this is outside of the parameters of the awards. This won't happen, but just so that I can talk about it, because I love talking about Derrick Henry. I mean, if Derrick Henry comes back in postseason and like pushes the Titans into the Super Bowl, I mean, what about that? Just saying. Within the framework of one season, comeback player of the year. I would like to do that.
Hey, from that standpoint, what if Eric Weddle pulls down like 7 interceptions in the postseason? Like, that is like the comeback player of the decade.
I will take Eric Weddle for anything, like ever. Like, if Eric Weddle's a candidate, he wins.
The only other people I think you give this award to, Joey Bosa, obviously came back, and we're, you know, talking about the 49ers in the playoffs, mostly because of the impact he has on defense. Sorry, Debo Samuel. But also Joe Burrow. I mean, if we're giving Ja'Marr Chase the offensive rookie of the year, Joe Burrow coming back, you know, I would almost want to give it to him over Dak Prescott, except for the fact that we picked Dak Prescott and I live or die by whether or not we're right about things. So here we go.
Yeah, no, that's exactly the thing is, you know, Dak, you're right, Samantha. We talked quite a bit about, even outside of the mechanics, just, you know, from once it seemed like, okay, Dak is fully physically, like, his level of play was a narrative from, you know, October, November, December. Oh, is Dak back? Is Dak great? Is Dak good? Is Dak okay? But like people weren't doing this in context of, wow, can you believe Dak came back from this? That, you know, this is the comeback story of the year. We're not even really talking about Joe Burrow that much, as much attention as, you know, the scar on his leg got, you know, on Instagram over the, you know, this time last year over the winter. Like, we're just kind of taking it for granted that guys would come back. I'm just glad for my own sake that we are talking about players who actually came back from injury and adversity. And not like, you know, like if Jared Goff hadn't gotten COVID and ended the December, you know, drew the line between beating the Cardinals and beating the Packers and was like offensive player of the month for December. But, oh, Jared Goff, comeback player of the year. Come back from what? Oh, you know, come back from sucking.
Oh, no. Like,
Matthew Stafford, in that vein, Matthew Stafford came back from playing for the Lions. Like, there is something to be said for he's been hamstrung for most of his career.
Yeah, it feels like every year or two there's a, like comeback player of the year. It's like, what did they come back from? Just like, but playing bad is not really a comeback. Okay, so all of these, we got to get to the big one, the granddaddy of them all, most valuable player. I don't think there is any way we can fault us. And by us, I mean myself and Samantha, for picking Kansas City Chiefs quarterback Pat Mahomes as we sat there in May looking at this field, looking at the board, looking at the players out there and going, this guy's going to be the MVP. You know, Chiefs are on, it's going to be the revenge tour. Pat Mahomes just signed a $500 million contract. Like, look out world. But Michael Schotty woke up and chose violence, in his own words on Twitter, and selected Aaron Rodgers because he wanted his vengeance to be quenched all season long. Schotty, as it stands right now, you are right. How, just give us in your own words how you feel in this moment. How are you reveling in your correctness?
Yeah, I don't know if I should have said that I wanted his vengeance to be quenched, but I vividly remember saying on this show and also probably elsewhere where I was doing radio hits, like, Aaron Rodgers has had no reason to have a chip on his shoulder this season, but he did. And you could tell that he did. And he made the COVID thing like I'm being an attacked thing. He made all the offseason stuff like the media is just beating up on me sort of thing. And so did a lot of Packer fans. And so did a lot of people in that franchise. And you can even see like Jordan Love, who like of all people should want Aaron Rodgers gone for so many different reasons. Like even Jordan Love is playing into the, you know, Aaron Rodgers is just getting attacked by the terrible people around him sort of thing. And Aaron Rodgers made it happen. Aaron Rodgers basically came down and said, all these people are mean to me. I'm going to show them. And I guess even if you make your own bulletin board material, it works out for you. And he's played fantastic this season. And I remember another thing that I said, because I really am doubling down on just me being right about everything today. He has a good supporting cast. And for all of the hubbub in the offseason about him wanting to go someplace that has a supporting cast, there are very few supporting casts like Aaron Jones, Davante Adams, and Bakhtiari around the league. And because he's had that kind of help all season long, and there's been more guys that have come out of the woodworks that, you know, are they those same guys without Aaron Rodgers? No, duh, that's how football works. But is he the same dude? Does he win MVP in Denver? I'm not so sure. Did they win a Super Bowl? Maybe because of the defense, but I'm not sure he puts up the offensive numbers that he would have put up if he goes to a place like Washington or goes to a place like Carolina or goes to a place like Denver. He's winning this award this season because he's got some pretty great help around him in Green Bay.
So, Shadi, normally I'm very happy for you when you're right about things, but this is like tying the complete button. Like, I hate this guy. I hate him. He is an awful, awful person. He's insufferable. I mean, and this goes way back to before the vaccine debacle, right? This is a guy who is still acting like he is the biggest victim in the world because he wasn't recruited as heavily as he feels he should have been when he was in college. Oh, he wasn't drafted where he felt that he should be. And then the dude spent like 15 years playing victim. It's disgusting. A grown man who has won a Super Bowl, who is an MVP, who acts like a giant baby about how he's so put upon. It's so gross. And this is why I hated this guy for long before he decided to pull this garbage, or even the garbage in the offseason, which, by the way, hated that too. I can't stand this guy. I think he's awful. I can't wait till he retires. It just, I hate it. I hate it. Absolutely hate it. Like, he's a terrible, terrible person. I cannot stand watching this guy. I don't even like watching Packers games because of this. But you know what? He's the best player in the league. Like, sucks for me. Sucks for all of us. But he's the MVP. I don't have to like it, but I will certainly acknowledge that he is the person who's earned the award. And because we don't have a character clause on this, he's the winner.
What I love about this show is that I can go as hard as I want against Aaron Rodgers, knowing for a fact that it will get drowned out in the hubbub of the violence Samantha will come with. Like, I could say terrible things about the guy's mother. I could, you know, say terrible things about his unborn children. And Samantha would somehow beat me. Samantha would somehow find a way to come over the top and just be like, nope, screw you, Shoddy. I hate Aaron Rodgers more.
And you know, when people have like a pet charity or a cause, think of this as the opposite. This is my pet hatred. I like to grow it and foster it and work on it and increase it as time goes by.
It's tremendous. I love it. I love it. I can't believe that in a three-person show, I'm like a distant third in Aaron Rodgers hating. It's incredible to me. I don't know how I'm lucky enough to be paired with you two. Like I said, for me, when we were talking about the Hub Arkish stuff, I wish, and again, it's outside the scope of this award, really, but to me, I can't say Aaron Rodgers is the most valuable player in the league for getting them right back to where they were last year, for getting them right back to where they were, you know, basically every year, right? Okay, great. You ran through the NFC North, double-digit wins. You're a one seed or a two seed. You're going to play a playoff game at home. Okay. And then what? And then what?
Because yes.
2010
yes.
was a long time ago.
Yep.
A long time ago. And I, you know, and I said it a couple weeks ago when we were talking about Hub Arkish, like, you can be one and done in the playoffs with Jordan Love. When you've got Davante Adams, you've got David Bakhtiari, you've got Devontae, you know, Aaron Jones, all those guys, and the defense playing the way that it is, then, you know, you can win 9 or 10 games instead of 12 or 13 games and lose the first playoff game you play every year. That's not that high a bar. If they don't win this playoff game, if they do not at least make the NFC championship game, this entire season meant nothing. Is a complete wash, a complete zero, and all of the distractions and all of the controversies and everything that we have had to deal with stirring the pot all year long was completely irrelevant, and they could have just traded him and gotten the exact same result. If they had 9-10 win, they'd still have won the NFC North. They'd still have done all of that with Jordan Love and the supporting cast they have. So I cannot abide Aaron Rodgers winning the MVP for doing what he does every single time, and it not amounting to anything, but I can't sit here and make a cohesive, sensible, logical argument for any other player in this league right now. All right, we have so much to get to. It is our big show. As always, we do have our big guest, Jarrett Bailey, and we are going to get to the full slate of picks against the spread and straight up, courtesy of pickwatch.com, when we come back here on 3 and Out, your national NFL podcast. Welcome back to 3 and Out, your national NFL podcast. It is our big show. Of course, we have a big guest for you, Jarrett Bailey. He's writer for Fansided, Steelers Nation, Steel Curtain, and of course, he hosts the Laces Out podcast. Always fun to talk to Jarrett, or have Jarrett talk to us, or, you know, join him on his pod, him on our pod, whatever. Glad to have you back. How are you doing today, Jarrett?
I'm doing good, guys. How are you doing?
We are fantastic. Jarrett, I wanted to talk to you because, you know, all of Twitter was rooting so hard for the tie that wasn't. And Samantha is a content director for NBC Sports. She was in the production for Sunday Night Football, and you know, like, that's her gig. And, you know, everybody was like, oh my gosh, this is a gift from the ratings gods, the whole sporting world, the whole world's eyes are on this. And you were on Twitter being in everybody's mentions like, no, no, bad, no, because you cover the Steelers and this is the thing that you couldn't have. What was it like being on, like, you know, the outside looking in while everybody was rooting for this? And then all of a sudden you were on the inside and everybody else was out in the cold.
So, like, on the last drive, like, the Raiders just decided not play defense anymore. And so, you know, Justin Herbert helped them convert a few third and longs, a few fourth and longs. And then they tied the game and it went into overtime. And then everybody else, that's when people were like, oh, okay, we might have something here. And then it gets to, like, the final minute and the Raiders run the ball when they're a little bit past midfield. And that's when it just kind of set in. Like, the entire 18-week season, after everything that we've gone through as fans, especially Steeler fans, like, Steeler fans have had it just so, it's been an up and down year. And at this point, I was just like, this may as well happen. Like, why wouldn't it? And you know, after the timeout, obviously they, you know, the Josh Jacobs breaks off a good enough run. Derek Carr calls a timeout because he loves the city of Pittsburgh, apparently. And Daniel Carlson kicks a game winning field goal. But literally 2 seconds away from the most improbable of outcomes happening, because first of all, like, obviously Jacksonville beating Indianapolis was already far fetched enough. Much less Jacksonville beating Indianapolis, the Steelers beating Baltimore, and Chargers Raiders ending in a tie. Like, the odds of that happening, like, if there was some way to bet on that, you would have made out like an absolute, like, you would have made a lot of money if you would have done that. So it was a crazy week 18. My emotions were very just up and down all day, especially like with the Jacksonville game, because, you know, they were playing at the same time the Steelers were. And, you know, I saw, okay, Jacksonville's a 7-0 lead. That's good. A few turnovers. That's good too. They kept selling for field goals in the red zone. And that made me feel like, okay, they're probably, this is going to come back to bite them. But no, Carson Wentz decided that he didn't want to play in January, and that was fine with me. So it worked out for the Steelers. You know, they get at least one more game of Big Ben, which is great. You know, as a Steeler fan, getting to see him at least take the field one more time. We've said one more time for the past like 3 weeks with Ben Roethlisberger. So we're just kind of carrying that out, but yeah, my emotions were all over the place. I needed a drink, a cigarette, maybe two. After all of that was done, it was crazy.
All right, so then moving forward, we have the Steelers going to see the Kansas City Chiefs in the first round of the playoffs. Nobody's giving the Steelers much of a chance here. The line was 12.5 the right last time I checked, but there's a reason we play these anyway. So sell this to me. How can the Steelers beat the Chiefs in advance and give Ben one more time?
I mean, they're going to have to do a lot, right? They have zero room for error. They need a lot of things to bounce their way. But if they do, then they've got a shot. Like, TJ Watt has to be an absolute menace. Like, he has got to be in Patrick Mahomes' face the entire game, but they've got to be able to get pressure with four, which they've been able to do, because if you blitz Patrick Mahomes, he's Jesus in cleats against the blitz. He's just so good when you send pressure against him. So if they can get pressure with four and TJ Watt is constantly wreaking havoc, then, you know, they can force some errant throws. They can maybe make Patrick Mahomes play the way he did the first month and a half of the season. And, you know, then they've got a chance. If he throws an interception and sets up Ben Roethlisberger and the Steelers on short field situations, like, if you're Ben Roethlisberger, the last thing that you want is constantly starting from the 20, 25 yard line, because they're not built to constantly do that all the time. So, you know, I think that for them, they just need turnovers. They need TJ Watt to constantly play, you know, wreak havoc. And they just need to protect the ball. As long as if they can run the ball as well. I saw a stat today that said the Steelers in the playoffs all the time are like 0-8 when Ben throws it more than 37 times and 13-1 when he throws it less than 37 times. Some weird stat, but still, apparently it's got some notion to it. So if they can get a good run game going with Najee Harris, if the defense shows up, they can get pressure on Patrick Mahomes. And if they don't turn the ball over, maybe they have a chance at that point, but still, you're going up against Patrick Mahomes and a Chiefs defense now that's really been playing well the past few weeks. So there's definitely a chance. Hopefully they pull out all the stops, you know, some trick plays, just go absolute balls to the wall with it, because, you know, nobody is giving them a chance and they're playing with house money. So if things go their way, sure. Like, there's obviously a chance. There's a reason we play the games, but they need a lot to go right.
So thanks to the magic of radio, we're actually talking to you right after or as the news is breaking that the Texans have fired head coach David Culley, leaving only one Black NFL head coach in the NFL and leaving a quarter of the NFL looking for head coaches. So because we're taping this after much of the rest of the show, you know, we're not going to talk about this anywhere else. So give us like your instant reaction to the David Culley firing. Are the Texans on base here? Was he always sort of a scapegoat? What are your thoughts?
I mean, I get that people are a little bit upset about it because he did better than what anyone really expected him to do. But David Culley was never going to be the long-term answer at head coach for the Texans. Like, he was literally their last choice because nobody else wanted the job to begin with. Like, he was hired in the midst of all the Deshaun Watson stuff where he wanted a trade. And eventually, obviously the stuff, you know, the legal issues started coming out. Nobody was going to want that job, especially like when they could just sit and wait another year and get better opportunities. So Culley was quite literally like, all right, we need somebody. Let's just give him the job and just make it through the year. Now, obviously, he did better than people would have thought. And that's going to give him good rapport throughout the league. But he was never going to be there long term. So, you know, now, you know, people are saying, okay, is it going to be Josh McDaniels next? Is Flores just going to go there? Maybe they're going to see if he can just kind of keep Deshaun Watson there somehow. I don't know. But it didn't surprise me whatsoever that he was a one and done. I didn't think that he would be there very long to begin with, just because, again, he was just a stopgap coach because nobody else wanted the job coming into the 2021 season because of everything going on surrounding Deshaun Watson and the roster got absolutely gutted. So not necessarily surprised. He'll find another job soon. If it's whether it's a head coaching job or not, I don't think it'll be a head coaching job right away. It'll be some sort of coordinator around the league, but he's not going to have a problem finding work after the job that he did with Houston, because he did much better than anybody would have anticipated.
So with a quarter of the NFL, two full divisions looking for head coaches, which of those spots do you think are the most attractive for potential head coaches? And give me sort of your like top couple candidates for some of those jobs.
Well, I mean, each place has obviously their pros and cons. I mean, you look at Minnesota, they've got a talented roster, but they also have a quarterback that's got, what is it, a $76 million dead cap or something like that going into this season. So that's a big thing that, all right, whoever the new GM and coach are, they're going to have to be on the same page about what they do with that. But I mean, the roster's talented. They were, you know, around week 14, they were still in the playoff hunt, and then they hit that last few game stretch that kind of knocked them out of it. The Bears, though, I think that if I'm a head coach right now, the Chicago Bears are probably the best option, just because it's going to be a new GM and head coach there with both Nagy and Pace gone. You got Justin Fields, who looks promising. So you need to get him a little bit more help. And then defensively, we know they're good there. So you got a young quarterback. If you've got good rapport around the league, let's say that Brian Flores goes there or something like that. Guys want to play for flow, they'll be more inclined to go there. Depending on what I think it'll be a very similar situation to, you know, Kyle Shanahan, John Lynch, where, all right, if they get that relationship right, if they get the quarterback right, they can just build around, maybe the defense that's been really good for them the past few years. So that would probably be my top option in terms of if I was a head coach right now, where I would want to go would be Chicago. I mean, and it's been, you know, similar guys over the past few years. Like, we know Bieniemy's good. He just doesn't seem to be getting a look. Brian Daboll in Buffalo is a guy that should get some looks. And if I'm the New York Giants, I'm looking at Brian Daboll, and he should be near the top of their list. If they can't get a Russell Wilson, like people are saying they're going to try to do, and Daniel Jones is back, I mean, bring Brian Daboll. We know that Daniel Jones is talented. Just bring Brian Daboll in and see if he can't do to Daniel Jones what he helped do with Josh Allen. Like, both of those guys can move. Both of those guys are talented. If everybody stays healthy this year for the Giants and Brian Daboll can do what he does, I don't see a reason why the Giants can't be immensely better than they were this past year. So Leslie Frazier is another guy that could get some looks. So we know that Buffalo's coaching staff is just stacked with coaching candidates because they've been so good over the past few years. So those are a few guys that I think will get some looks. You know, McDaniels will get some looks as well. Obviously, he's been linked to the Houston job already, but whether he decides to do that or whether that becomes an official offer or not is yet to be seen. But, you know, Brian Daboll's a guy that I think should get some looks. And then, you know, Brian Flores, yeah, he just got fired, but he'll have a head coaching job before long. So, you know, there's definitely guys out there that will get get their opportunities. Nathaniel Hackett as well, maybe Mike McDaniel. So there's definitely an array of guys as we transition into more, you know, head coaches that are offense savvy. You know, everybody wants to try to find the next Sean McVay. Those are a few guys in there as well that could be in that next line of younger coaches with an offensive mind. So there's never a shortage of guys every year to get looks. Kellen Moore as well. He had his interview with the Jaguars. So I could keep listing guys for a while, but you get the point. There's going to be a lot of heads that are going to get their chance.
All right. I was going to ask you about the NFC playoff field, but I'm calling an audible here because we were talking before we started recording, and you will all have heard by this point in the show, me having a complete meltdown about Aaron Rodgers earlier. And I asked Jared about this when we were coming in, said, what do you think of Aaron Rodgers? How do you feel about this? And he said, I'm hoping to see him in black and gold next year. So I need to know more about this. Let's give somebody a chance to rebut my Aaron Rodgers' terrible take.
I mean, like coming into the year, like I've been riding the Aaron Rodgers to Pittsburgh train since last April. Like this isn't new. It started off as a bit, but like it slowly gained traction, actually became like the small possibility that I've just kind of held on to going into the next, this coming off season. But no, look, you can disagree with like his views on vaccinations or whatever his political views are. That's fine. He's still a hell of a football player. He's still going to win the MVP again. Now look, does he have the tendency to be a tad bit of a drama queen? Sure. But you know, all athletes have some level of ego. He's just a little bit more outspoken about his. I'm fine with that. When you're a guy who has like 10 of the, I think he has like all five of the top five seasons in history in terms of touchdown to interception ratio, where he's throwing like 45 touchdowns and 6 picks. Like he's literally a tight. I think the answer for Pittsburgh, they're not going to draft quarterback class to be their franchise guy going forward. So yeah, I would love for him to be there. I don't know what it would take to get him. I'm not going to pretend to be a GM expert or trade expert, but you know, if Carson Wentz and Matthew Stafford and guys like that can garner the type of draft capital they did, it's going to take a king's ransom to get Aaron Rodgers. And that, you know, look, that's understandable. He's still got, you know, it's still very clear that he's still got a decent amount of years left in him. And can keep teams wherever he is a contender. But I'm an Aaron Rodgers guy. I mean, I'm pretty outspoken about that on Twitter. I like Aaron Rodgers. So I get that he can rub people the wrong way, but you know, I'm all for a guy who speaks as much. Like we want our athletes to be honest about how they feel, but a lot of times when they do, we kind of give them crap for it. But I'm an Aaron Rodgers guy. I hope he ends up in Pittsburgh. That would make me very happy. But we'll see what happens going forward.
Okay, so outside of bringing in Aaron Rodgers, and there's a lot of, I mean, we talked about the head coach openings. There's some quarterbacks that could be finally moving. There's a lot of potential instability in some of these long dynasties. You know, look at what's going on in Seattle. What's the most shocking offseason move you think could actually happen?
Most shocking? I think that Russell Wilson is going to be traded out of Seattle. Now in terms of like the teams, like everybody's saying, okay, you know, New Orleans, maybe the Giants, maybe I think a dark horse in all of this has been the Cleveland Browns, because if the Browns have Russell Wilson, they're my Super Bowl favorite out of the AFC. Like with that roster, like I was pounding the table this past offseason saying that they were going to win the AFC North, and then Baker hurt every part of his body and played like hell throughout the entire season. So look, they dealt with a lot of different things, but I mean, defensively, when they're all healthy, they're to me, like when coming into week one this past season, they had the best roster 1-53 head to toe in football. Like they're so talented on both sides of the ball. Now, obviously they're going to have to get a little bit deeper at the receiver position. Now that Odell's gone. But I mean, they've got the best running back duo in football, arguably the best offensive line in football. Miles Garrett, one of the best edge rushers in football. They got a great cornerback room, a great safety tandem. Like they are good all over the field. There's very few weaknesses with the Cleveland Browns. You add a guy like Russell Wilson to lead the charge there. Like, and plus a division where we would then have quarterbacks of Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, Russell Wilson, and if things go my way, Aaron Rodgers. Like the AFC North would be absolutely disgusting next year if both of those things happen, and that would be so fun to watch. the four of them just duke it out to see who could be who would win the AFC North. And if that does happen, there's a very good chance that all four teams in the AFC North make the playoffs next year. So I think that Russell Wilson to the Browns, I kind of want to call my shot on it, because I get that they extended Baker, but at the same time, we've seen situations in the past where guys have been given contracts or they've been extended and then teams have moved off them. So it's not completely out of the blue. But that's something where if he was to get moved, which I think he will, Cleveland should definitely throw their name in there, because that could change the course of their franchise even more than it's already been changed in the past few years. Like, obviously Baker has helped them finally get out of that eternal hellscape that they were in for two decades. But it seems that they've kind of hit their ceiling with him. So if they have a chance to get Russell Wilson, then they should absolutely do that.
All right. Well, if you have a football podcast and you have a chance to get Jarrett Bailey on, you go ahead and do that. Jarrett, where can people follow your work?
Oh, you can follow me on Twitter at JBaileyNFL. I usually tweet out all my stuff. Fansided, Steel Curtain, Steeler Nation. Subscribe to the Laces Out Pod. Kurt and I do it every week. You can get it wherever you listen to podcasts, you know, Spotify, Apple, wherever. So all of it on Twitter at JBaileyNFL. I tweet about wrestling a lot too. I have a wrestling podcast too. If you like wrestling, subscribe to that too. Why not? It's called Bailey and the Bird. Me and Benjamin Raven do that. We'll be interviewing the new voice of Impact Wrestling, Tom Hannafan, next week. So tune in for that.
All right. All right. Will do. There goes Jarrett Bailey, writer for Fansided, Steelers Nation, Steel Curtain, The Laces Out Pod, and Bailey and the Bird. Awesome stuff as always, Jarrett. Stay with us right here on 3 and Out. We are going to pick the full slate of games courtesy of pickwatch.com. It's going to be a wild one. Stay with us on the break. We are 3 and Out, your national NFL podcast. All right, we are back on 3 and Out, your national NFL podcast. We are going to pick the wild card round, all of the matchups courtesy of pickwatch.com. Over the last decade, more than 10 million people have used PickWatch to help source picks from the very best experts and users in both NFL media and the fan base at large. Now with PickWatch Pro, you can get advanced analytics and insights to take your game to the next level. Use offer code 3OutPod for 25% off your first year of membership. That's just like our website, our Twitter handle, our Instagram handle, TREEOUTPOD, 3OutPod, all spelled out, for 25% off your first year of PickWatch Pro. Go to pickwatch.com/pro for more details. All right, let's get into it. Raiders getting 5 points at the Cincinnati Bengals. You guys, the Sunday night football tie that should have been but wasn't sent the Raiders to Cincinnati instead of Kansas City. Shadi, what do you think?
I think the Bengals are going to win this football game. The Raiders have been playing over their skis the past couple of weeks, but the Bengals are really good. And I don't see how, I don't see how the offense deals with the Bengals pass rush consistently. I think you can probably, you know, take some shots down the field. Hunter Renfrow is going to get his. But more importantly, I don't see how the Raiders defense consistently deals with Ja'Marr Chase. Like, I just don't think you have enough guys in that room who can, you know, scheme their way into covering a guy like Ja'Marr Chase or keeping Joe Burrow from whipping the ball 60 yards down the field to him.
Yeah, this is This was a good draw for the Bengals. I certainly like this better for them, who I think they're deserving of being in the playoffs, but a little bit shaky as far as how far they can really get. I certainly like this a lot better for them than a matchup with the Patriots. And I even like it better for them than a matchup with the Steelers, even though I think the Raiders are a lot better than the Steelers. I just think you don't want to see that divisional opponent. At this point, it's a little bit scarier, I think, than it would be for basically anyone else drawing Pittsburgh, where you'd thank your lucky stars and go, thank you, Brandon Staley, for this free win in the postseason. But this one is, yeah, I mean, it's a great story what the Raiders have been doing, and I hope that they can keep this close. I can't make a pick, per se, on this one, but I just think the Bengals are going to get their first playoff win here since, 1990? It's been a while.
Yeah, 91. Though the Berlin Wall had fallen, the official reunification of East and West Germany into Germany had not yet taken full effect. So that's how long it's been since the Cincinnati Bengals have won a playoff game.
Oh, we were in like elementary school. That's wild.
Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah.
I was in kindergarten.
Oh my gosh.
All right. Well, here's the thing. I'm actually writing about this for 538 this week, which is that what the Raiders did by kicking that field goal instead of taking the knee is clear the way for a team that we were talking about going into week 18, you know, a week that the Bengals sat their starters and just threw the ball like once to Ja'Marr Chase so he could break the record and sit down. As the hottest team in football, the Bengals were on a tear and just beat the Chiefs in a you know, good old-fashioned shootout. Joe Burrow outshot Patrick Mahomes. And people are like, wow, the Bengals are dangerous. The Bengals are hot. Nobody wants to play the Bengals. And then, like, Chargers Raiders just completely wiped our brains of anything except Chargers Raiders. And now it's like, all right, cool. Well, instead of getting the Patriots, the Bengals get the Raiders. Bengals, I think, are going to walk through the Raiders into the second round. And because of the Titans and the Chiefs and how that all played out, you know, the division champs are all big, big favorites now. Unless the Steelers upset the Chiefs, that gives the Bengals the Titans instead of the Chiefs. So Cincinnati's path to the AFC Championship game is as good as it possibly could be. So again, you know, thanks Brandon Staley for the Raiders' birth, but, you know, thanks to Rich Bisaccia for giving us potentially lots more Bengals. Speaking of the Patriots, they go back to Buffalo, and they're getting 4 points on the way. Samantha, how do you see this one playing out?
So these third meetings between two teams are always weird. And usually what we end up doing is throwing one of them out because it's from so early in the season that, you know, these guys are different animals now and it's no longer relevant. But these guys, this is the third time they've played since week 13. So great job, schedule makers. I'm not even sure if I'm being sarcastic there or not. It's tough. I think you can make a great argument for either of these teams. What is really kind of, it comes down to for me is that are the Bills capable of essentially beating themselves by making mistakes? Yes, absolutely. But are they the better team, even in spite of a few mistakes? I think that's also true. I think the Patriots are kind of, you know, to use your phrase, shoddy, playing over their skis a little bit. That defense looks really, really gassed. Giannis basically disappeared. Just not the same team as they were. And while I think we always have to recognize that, you know, Bill's Giants in the postseason, this is Bill's time. The postseason, the Patriots are often a different animal than what we see at the end of the regular season. So I'm a little bit cautious when I say this, but I think the Bills want it more. And I think the ceiling is higher for them. And I think they're going to play that way this week. So I'm going to take the Bills.
What's weird to me in this one is the Bills probably would love this matchup better at Foxborough. that they have actually played so poorly at home.
Yeah.
There's actually this sort of meme going around Twitter right now. What's a goofy, you know, sports take that you actually believe is true? And someone's that I saw, and I'm sad that I can't credit it, but it was literally that Buffalo needs to build a dome if they're going to get anything out of Josh Allen. And I was like, no, I believe in that too. I believe in that too. There you go. Mina Kimes. Like, it was perfect. It was like, that's, I don't want to lean into that too much because I think the weather's going to be okay this weekend. It's supposed to be like 30 and you know, light wind. We're not talking like crazy snowstorm this weekend in Buffalo. But again, crazy snowstorm can always happen in Buffalo. I think the Patriots win this game because there are so many like little things wrong with their defense that I think can click into place in a big matchup like this. And I just think that there's organizational memory that the Patriots know how to do things like this better than the Buffalo Bills organization does. So maybe that's a little bit too, you know, Bill Belichick worshipy, but you know, I'll kneel at the throne a couple more times because I haven't been proved wrong yet.
Yeah. I have been saying for a few years now that I have stopped trying to analyze, you know, both Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, right? I have stopped trying to give my professional, sensible, logical, rational opinions on anything to do with the Patriots or the cornerstones of the Patriots dynasty because they just put the clown suit on me every single time. I think we all know that the weird weather and the weird no passing game plan was as fluky as it was brilliant, but it also fits into, as Shadi said, a very long pattern of the Pats housing the Bills in Buffalo and then the Bills getting them back at home, you know, in New England. And I just see this. I think it's a tough matchup for both teams. I'm certainly going to take the Pats to cover because I don't see this as a big win in either direction. I am really rooting for the Bills here because I want to see Josh Allen get past this. I want to see Josh Allen do well in bad weather. And, you know, I just want Buffalo Bills fans to be happy, right? Can we get an all neglected fan base? Like, can we finally stop, you know, no more Steelers, get the Steelers out of here. You know, I want Raiders, Bills, Bengals, you know, let's have.
Well, these are good fan bases too. Yeah. Like, right. Like people who deserve it, you know, like not, these are not like jerk fan bases. I want this for them so badly.
I'm just worried that the NFL's like beer and liquor deals will go down the tube because the drinking in these cities will go down just really badly when you start having playoff wins and Super Bowl wins in some of these cities. There will be no reason to drink anymore.
Okay, as a Cleveland fan, I can confirm for you that that is in fact not true. The Browns fans, despite performing far better ever since they unlocked those Bud Light fridges after the losing streak.
Yes.
I think they're actually drinking more now. It's hard to say, but it's high volume. So nobody worry. Please, liquor companies, do not worry. Especially if you're in these Rust Belt places, you know, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Buffalo. They'll keep drinking. Don't worry.
I'll just say, as a beer league soccer player, just immediately pre-COVID in indoor soccer, there was a team that I played against, and the team name was Win or Lose, We Booze. And that is the Rust Belt attitude to sports.
Yes.
So
yes.
That's how we do it up here. All right. Speaking of, man, I hate to do this. Speaking of jerk fan bases who drink too much, the Eagles are getting 8.5 points at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I'm sorry, Philly fans, I love you. Don't throw batteries at me. Shadi, how do you think this one's going to go?
Does that make you hipster Santa? Is that what we're going for here? Yeah. Man, if anyone can beat the Bucs right now, it's probably the Eagles. The Buccaneers sort of superpower, other than the, you know, we've got Tom Brady and Tom Brady can do magic things. Like, he's led more scoring drives than anyone else in NFL history for them this season. They're doing just great work on the offensive side of the ball. Defensively, their superpower for a while has been their run defense. And even if that's back at full strength, because it hasn't been, it's been pretty shaky over the last half of the season and it's led to some of their losses. Even if it's back at full strength, because they're getting Levante David back, they're getting Shaq Barrett back. Like, there are some reasons to believe like they are going to hit this game on all cylinders. I think the Eagles can beat them because the matchup is just good. It's strength on strength. And I think the Eagles' strength in their offensive rushing attack is better. And defensively, they can also stop the run against a team like, you know, like the Buccaneers, but, you know, then there's playoff Lenny, and playoff Lenny's probably going to go off no matter what. I am taking the Bucs in this one, but I think the line is a little bit more tied with public perception of these two teams. And if I've been the dude sort of on the table shouting that the Eagles are better than we all think for the last couple of weeks, I'm going to say that here. I think I'm not usually the guy who sort of picks spread or not, but I would say I'm taking the Bucs to win this one, and I will take the Eagles against the spread.
First of all, Eagles people, don't listen to Ty. I think you're wonderful. I mean, you're absolutely jerks who drink too much, but as someone who comes from another fan base, jerks who drink too much, I appreciate you. I get it. I mean, it's just, it's tough out there, man. Like, it's snowing, the team's not performing well, and, you know, you had to deal with Carson Wentz for years, which would make anyone drink.
You've got, I mean, Danny DeVito crawling out of your couches.
Yeah, I mean, there's Santa, boy, he's a problem. Jeez. They had to Crisco the light poles there. I love you guys. That being said, this is going to be a tough one. I don't think I'm going to agree with Shadi. I don't think this is quite as lopsided as odds makers would suggest, or as most analysts would suggest. If the Bucks were 100% healthy and functioning sort of at their peak of what they could do, then yeah, this would be a lot tougher game. But I don't think Philly is completely out of this one at all. We have other far more lopsided matchups here, even though this is the one that everybody is talking about, like, oh, the Eagles don't have a prayer. I think because of matchup issues and injuries for the Bucks, that they have a chance to stay in this game. And I'm going to do the same thing as Shadi. I think that the smart play here is to kind of hedge a little bit and just say, okay, I'm going to take the Bucks, because I do still think, unfortunately for you guys, sorry, jerks who drink too much, probably not coming out of this one with a win. But I will take Philly against the spread, because I think we owe some respect back to the Eagles here, who I think are going to be much more in this than thought.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to stay with what I said before. I've been saying it all December, that people give Tom Brady credit for being great in December when he's actually great in January. And I think we saw, you know, some big bumps down the road in November and December, Tampa Bay. And I think Tom Brady lives and dies and the whole year is set up for the playoffs. I think that's what Tom Brady has. Tom Brady is gonna do. I absolutely do not ever lay 8.5 in a situation like this, as capable as this. And the Eagles have been, you know, closing gaps and winning games against the spread and upsetting teams and keeping games close all year long. But I'm gonna pick the Bucks in a runaway because Tom Brady. Again, reference previous Pat's pick. All right, this is one I think we are both fascinated. I think we are all fascinated by this one. The 49ers getting 3 points at the Dallas Cowboys. And guys, this is our NFC team that we thought down the stretch would be the one nobody wants to play. That would be the one that would surprise everyone, against the NFC team who's probably the best overall football team, even if their record and strength metrics haven't always consistently showed it, and there have been flashier teams and better teams at various stretches across the season. So guys, where do we end up, Samantha? 49ers, Cowboys.
I'm a little sad that this matchup is taking place in the first round. I kind of hate that. I would have liked to see this much deeper into the playoffs, but I mean, this is such a like fantastic nostalgia trip. For people about our age, the old 49ers Cowboys rivalry get dragged out. My two best friends, one of them is a 49ers fan and one of them is a Cowboys fan. And I'm like the tiebreaker there. So that's going to be interesting. I was just like, oh man, this hasn't been real since like we were little kids and like, you know, Troy Aikman and Steve Young and Jerry. So weird to think about. But I think it's super cool. These teams like super, super hated each other. Their fan bases super hated each other back in the day. So maybe we can revive a little bit of that. And it is probably one of the best matchups of the week. I'm not sure that plays out on paper the way that it should. But as you said, Ty, you know, we've been talking about the 49ers. Like, that's the one you don't want to draw, because I think they're a lot more dangerous than sort of what their seeding and how they finish the regular season would imply. But by the same token, yeah, Dallas, I mean, they look like the most complete football team, at least in the NFC right now. So I think it's going to be interesting. I'm particularly watching the secondaries here, because I think both of these offenses have a way to badly exploit them if they play their cards right. But I'm also looking at the coaches. I think we need to watch Kyle, because he has a tendency to outsmart himself, which could really come back on him here if he doesn't keep it simple and trust his run game to kind of keep the defense honest in Dallas. And I certainly don't trust Mike McCarthy anywhere near clock, especially in a postseason game. So could be wild, but guys, taking the 49ers, I think we're going to see the upset here.
I like this matchup. I like both of these teams, but as Samantha was saying, I don't trust either of these teams, because as I look at sort of the Achilles heels of both of these teams, I think the strength of the other team is what plays into it. The Dallas run game has been so bad all season long that if you can really shut down Dak Prescott in the passing attack, you can you know, do some things. And I think the 49ers pass rush has the ability to do that. So you can't lean on your running game against the 49ers. Meanwhile, talking about the 49ers running game, yeah, I think you can run against the Cowboys, but you can't do that with Deebo Samuel. If you're trying to use Deebo Samuel as sort of that Swiss Army knife, get him in space, move him all over the place, you know, use him at X at one time, then throw him at Y, and then put him at Z, and then put him in the backfield. Like, yeah, but Micah Parsons, like Micah Parsons can stop all of that from happening. You can put him one-on-one with him on at X. You can put him one-on-one with him in the backfield. You can put him right at the line of scrimmage and make it hell for Dak Prescott to get Deebo Samuel the ball anywhere, or sorry, make it hell for Jimmy Garoppolo to give him the ball anywhere on the field. So I believe truly that this game is probably going to end up being pretty sloppy. I think this game is going to end up being a little bit more low scoring. I think Jimmy Garoppolo's health plays into this. I think the home field advantage plays into this because, Ty, I know that you noted in your stuff for 538 that Jerry World has not been great home field advantage. This is a playoff game. This is going to be a lot of rabid Cowboys fans, not just here because they have the season tickets and they've got the corporate box seats. This is going to be some lubed up, liquored up, long, quote unquote, suffering Cowboys fans that are going to be very loud in this one for a rivalry that has been unearthed from the tombs that it was in. And I think the Cowboys win a close game, basically because Jimmy Garoppolo ends up throwing that second interception that always dooms his team, or Deebo Samuel just can't get loose.
Yeah, I love reveling in the old rivalry. You know, this is one of those kids these days can't understand, but I'm like, I'm trying to think of something that could shake the foundations of the NFL as much as Deion Sanders going from San Francisco to Dallas at the peak of that rivalry. Could, you know, I switched
allegiances because of that. Sorry, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I was just saying I switched allegiances in that rivalry because of that when Deion Sanders switched teams.
Oh dang. Oh no. Yeah. So I think that it's just like, again, I mean, even rivalries like that are so tough because it's tough to build consistent winners. It's tough to have consistent winners consistently meet each other in the playoffs. You don't have, you know, that free agency and that allowed, you know, star players to start switching teams now means that, like, you know, in any given game, half these guys have played with half these guys, right? You don't have that, like, I hate those guys. I hate them. I hate all of them. I hate their guts. I hate their mothers. I hate, you know, the ground they walk on. I hate the colors that they wear when, like, you know, three guys on the other team and you know that, like, in 2 years when your contract comes up, hey, if they offer the most money, you're going to go play too. So it's tough, but I think there are going to be, like Shadi said, a lot of people in the stands that do remember this, that have been waiting since 1995 for the Cowboys to win a playoff game and go to the conference championship game and actually be as relevant as we've been talking like they are pretty much that entire time. I do like the way the 49ers match up here, but when I don't trust either team, I trust my numbers. And my numbers say the Cowboys are like, they should be like a 5.5, 6-point favorite in this game. And instead, they're only favored by 3 and it's at home. And I'm going to take the Cowboys straight up and against the spread. And I will see. And I think Samantha nailed it because I think more than anything else, This is a matchup of two coaches who really have something to prove, who really have to prove that they know what they're doing, that they know the squads they've built, and that they can make good decisions in the playoffs and put their players in the best position to win. Because the shine has come off Kyle Shanahan quite a bit. And I think those new spots that Mike McCarthy is wearing are very new and very thin. And I don't think you're going to have to rub very hard before they come off. All right, Steelers getting 12.5 at the Kansas City Chiefs. Shadi, what do you think?
Oh, that's probably not big enough. The Steelers are playing better football than they deserve to play because of how little they address some of the big glaring issues on their roster this offseason. Kudos to head coach Mike Tomlin, who is one of the best coaches in the NFL, if not in NFL history. The dude has not had a losing season yet. He continues to do things really the best that he can. You could not have imagined a scenario in which this team got to the playoffs, and they are. And it's not just TJ Watt. Like, it's also like they are getting just every little drop out of the offense. And it's not just Najee Harris on offense too. It is that passing attack is really just eating up everything they can, 5 to 7 yards. You know, if there's something open in 5 to 7 yards, Ben Roethlisberger hits it. Not quickly, but he hits it. Defensively, they're playing really well, even though their pass defense should not be as good as it is. Is there a chance that they just line up, play, you know, cover three, rush four, and are still able to get to Mahomes and rough him up a little bit? Yeah, I think there is. I think that there is a slight chance that this game starts in such a way that it looks rougher for the Chiefs than it's going to end up. But at the end, we're talking, even with some of the Chiefs' recent like stumbles in the last couple of weeks, they are still just over, like, from top to bottom, they are the best team in football. And defensively, I think they are able to absolutely make this game ugly, and ugly in a hurry. So I'm sort of predicting one of those games where it's like 3-3 at the end of the first quarter, and then like, 17-3 at the end of the half, but maybe the Steelers look like they've got a little momentum, and then it's like 48-10. This is going to end up being a bloodbath, because when you have such a talented team just applying constant pressure in all three phases of the game, a team like the Steelers is going to fall short, and they're going to fall short in embarrassing fashion.
Yeah, this is where we kind of have to rack up the score between the Steelers being essentially a good, bad team and the Chiefs being a good, good team. So, you know, if you put together like the Punnett square for this, whatever, we use the old genetics charts, like good, good beats good, bad every time. I mean, way more often than it beats bad, good. So I just don't see the Steelers as like having a prayer here. Mike Tomlin is a fantastic coach, but like, he's not a wizard. So there's only so much that he can do here. And the Chiefs just basically have the edge in pretty much every capacity that I can think of. And I don't think TJ Watt, being the defensive player of the year, is going to like rattle the foundations of this game and change the outcome. As good as he is, one man. Since I don't think that that's going to have that big of an impact on this game. So obviously I can't pick on this one and can't really comment on the spread, but I don't think it will be close. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, the Steelers are bad and the Chiefs are good. Chiefs. Cardinals getting 3.5 at the LA Rams. This is the matchup. I am super excited for this one. We've seen it twice already this year. I could see it 3 times. I could see it 4 times. This is the all-in push from the big, flashy, Stan Kroenke, $4 billion stadium, all-in, Sean McVay, WizKid, highlights, OBJ, Von Miller, Eric Weddle, just literally collecting everybody, you know, putting back together the, like, 2015 All-Pro team as the best team money can buy versus the Cardinals, where, you know, they're not shy on flash either. You know, Cliff Kingsbury, that pad we saw in draft day 2020, and Kyler Murray, certainly flashy. But this is a Cardinals team that took everybody by surprise and then has had to gut it out and find some pluckiness and some lunch bucketness after Nuke Hopkins went down. Samantha, where do you end up on the Arizona Cardinals as they go to SoFi Stadium?
So the line on this one is pretty close to a pick-up because of home field. Yeah. So that's interesting. Look, this is, we're all super excited about this matchup, right? Which is kind of weird considering that neither one of these teams really looked all that good at the close of this season. And yet I think we're going to get a really good and entertaining football game out of this. I'm super glad this is a primetime game and this is a game on Monday night. So we will be on halftime when this one comes on. So that's pretty cool too.
Yes.
But look, it's so hard to pick a winner in this one because you're thinking, okay, I've seen
both Sean McVay and Cliff Kingsbury do some incredible things. I've also seen them both do some really stupid things. I've seen Sean McVay do something stupid far more recently, but I've also seen him do a lot more consistent, smart things than I've seen out of Cliff Kingsbury. I know everybody says Cliff can't close. We don't know if that applies to the playoffs. We're not sure. I know that people want to drag that back to the Texas Tech days and say, yep, it does. They're going to choke. But I don't really think it's about that. I think the Rams probably the higher ceiling team at this point, but are they going to play that way? I don't know. I think this is probably the hardest pick of the week because these two are both pretty unpredictable and we're just not sure where they're at. The Rams don't really have a lot of quality wins and the Cardinals haven't had a quality win in a long time. So where do we land on that, right? So I'll take the Rams, but I'm not very confident in that pick at all.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to something Ty said earlier. Like when you don't know what to trust, Ty leans on his numbers. I'm going to lean on the team. I kind of want to win this game. Like I want the Cardinals to win. I do not trust Matthew Stafford in big moments. Never have. When I scouted his college tape, I thought, man, that's a guy who has all the physical tools, but also tends to lay eggs in the worst moments. We've seen that down the stretch. As much as Cliff Kingsbury has had trouble closing out seasons, Matthew Stafford has trouble doing a lot of things when the pressure is on. He's got a ton of moments where he does look like the dude. He at one point had like, you know, a phenomenal stretch of like fourth quarter comebacks and game winning drives. But he's also now really known for throwing that like second back breaking pick, the one that you absolutely can't throw. And when you, you know, have trouble, you know, if you're down 10 and kick that field goal, all you need is one last drive. He tends to throw picks in those circumstances. And I think this could be a game where because both defenses are so multiple, so savvy, so able to, you know, shut some things down. If Cooper Kupp can't be like a 12 catch, 150 yard dude, is there enough in the wheelhouse that you can elude the Cardinals defense, get open and get the ball to Odell Beckham? Sure, that absolutely can happen. But if you also get into a foot race with Kyler Murray doing the same thing on the other side of things, I actually trust Kyler Murray to put his team on his back more than I trust Matthew Stafford right now. I am more than willing to be proved wrong. I think this is going to be a fantastic game. I think almost the opposite of Pats, Bills, and Eagles, Bucks, which I think are going to be lower scoring. 49ers, Cowboys, which I think is lower scoring. I think this could be like a 45-43 game, and I am here for it.
Yes, please give me all the entertainment. Please give me all the bombs. Please give me all the huge plays. Give me all the highlight clips. I want to see Stafford and Murray just chucking it. I want to see a track meet. Let's go. I'm absolutely for it. And I'm really torn because this comes down to, for me, trusting Sean McVay. And I think this is something that we said, you know, during the Jared Goff days, like Jared Goff will go as far as Sean McVay can coach him to go, right? That when the Rams lost that Super Bowl, it's because Bill Belichick ate Sean McVay's lunch from a coaching perspective. And Jared Goff was left to make plays on his own. And we realized, oh, Jared Goff can't make plays on his own. The table's got to be set for him so that he can, you know, just pull the trigger or just eat, I guess, to not mix our metaphors here. But I don't know. I don't know if I trust Sean McVay. I don't know if I trust him against that defense. Cardinals have been playing so well all year. But again, the numbers lean Rams. And I think the talent without Nuke Hopkins on the board leans Rams. And I got up on the table for the Rams all year long, and I think I am going to do it again. Shadi, like you said, like who do I want to see? What's the story I want to see? I want to see the Rams in the second round. I do not want to see this fall apart. I don't want to see all these entertaining players not cash in and then go back and look at guys like Cooper Kupp, Offensive Player of the Year, and all these other players that have been waiting for a chance to cash in. I think it's just too good a story. So I'm going to go Rams. You guys, go to the halftime.app in your browser. Go to your app store. download Halftime. Make sure you guys are locked and loaded because we are going to be talking about Cardinals Rams live at 9 o'clock Eastern, just like we always do on Halftime. We do a live show. We basically do, you know, our reactions and news during the day, whether we do key takeaways or not. That morning, we will be loaded and ready to go for this incredible game. And we're going to talk about it live, and you can ask questions, chop it up. We'll react to all the other playoff games, all that other stuff. Just make sure that you download the Halftime app and follow us. It's all of our same handles. It's just like on Twitter, at Ty Shalter, at Shoddy, at Samantha Bunton. We will see you there. Make sure if you're subscribed, you're leaving ratings, you're leaving reviews, you're telling people about it. Make sure you're going to our new website, 3outpod.com. All the episodes are up there. We're putting up other content, written content. We've got new links, new stuff to check out. So go check it out. And then be back on Monday right here on 3 and Out, your national NFL podcast.